In this episode of Nightmare Echoes, Elazar and Jesse cover the 1976 film The Omen, while referencing other movies such as Rosemary's Baby and the other four Omen films. Also, I wanted to mention that next week we'll be covering the 2017 film Happy Death Day with Margot. So that gives you a week to watch that one. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to Nightmare Echoes. I'm your host, Elazar. I'm joined again by co-host Jesse. Jesse, how's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty fantastic.
All right. So today we're covering The Omen 1976. We wanted to give a spoiler-free kind of synopsis of the movie to see if people want to go watch it before they hear this. What could we say about it?
Let's say a child who is a bit scary, a bit spooky, winds up being adopted without the knowledge of the mother. I mean, because she thinks it's her own child, but really her own child died. And this spooky child is spooky, and people start dying. Sure. It's not clear what's going on, but the father begins to realize things are not so great, is warned that things are not so great by a priest, and you know, all kinds of stuff happens. And long story short, the question you should be asking is the world going to end? Or is the father going to find a way to solve the problem?
Sure. Okay. All right. Here's your chance. Go watch it. If you want to pause this, go watch the movie. Come back. If not, we're going to spoil the whole thing. Living in Rome, we have Robert Thorne. He's an American diplomat, and he's on his way to visit his wife, who she's giving birth. But you could tell he knows that the child's dead because he's kind of going over a voiceover. The child's dead. He only took a breath, but then he died. And we get Father Spoleto, who gives Robert the idea that he should adopt this child whose mother died during childbirth. And he says if the mother isn't into adopting, you can hide the fact from her because the baby kind of looks like you anyway. He's like, on this night, Mr. Thorne, God has given you a son. It's just not the one you thought it would be.
Yeah. But they did say the mother died during childbirth, but that's the only thing we ever heard about the parents of that child. I just want to point that out for later.
Of course. Yeah. I was like, I got what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Robert does decide to keep the details away from Kathy, and they name the boy Damien. And I had to think at this moment, there was a time that wasn't a name that people would associate with evil.
That's true. I agree.
Yeah. And like, that was a common name back then.
I know. The Omen was what made that name cursed.
Right.
And I remember there was a stand-up comedian act, right, where I don't remember what it was, but he was just playing off of some creepy child that was born to somebody, and they're like, oh, what's his name? Damien. It's like, well, I think it was something like, oh, well, what about his brother? What's his name? Malachi. I think it's funny because Damien's scary because of the omen, and Malachi's scary because of Children of the Corn, right?
Yes, so. Yeah, exactly. Is this Bull Burnham?
Probably.
I don't know if it probably. Is or not. I'll have to fact check this later.
I very likely.
Yeah, okay. Years later, we cut Robert is telling Kathy that they need to pack and they need to be gone by the morning. She's like, why? And he goes, because of the ambassador of the court of St. James. And she's like, who's that? And he's like, you're married to him. It's like, what? And he's like, sweetie, I've been appointed the ambassador of Great Britain. So she's really happy and they move there.
Another example of them telling the audience in plain English, which should be obvious immediately after he says that, right? Yeah, exactly. But like, come on.
Right. So Kathy gets this massive house. It's a freaking mansion.
Yeah, it's a freaking awesome house.
It is. It's got wings. Like, you know, like, it's insane how big it is.
Not like it flies away, but like, it has like a west wing and an east wing or something.
Right,
like
exactly.
That.
Yeah. He says it's a little much, and she says it's not too much for the future president of the United States.
Well, and they're not ambitious at all.
Right. He's like, you're a little pushy. like, be happy with what we got.
Although, I think there's a point in pointing that out, right? Because they're pointing out, like, he is this ambitious,
sure,
big deal guy, and that explains, I think, a lot of why this child winds up theirs.
Right. So now that they live in London, all of them take Damien out for a walk, and she notices that he's gone missing. They're talking to each other, the adults, And Robert's like, where's the Damien? Kathy's like, he was right there. So they run to go find him. When they find him behind a tree, he's just laughing. They're like, never do that to us again. And they pick him up and then he just starts crying. And then we cut to his fifth birthday party. We see photographers are there. Holly is Damien's nanny and Kathy goes up and says she'll take Damien. And then we stay with Holly and we see her make eye contact with a Rottweiler and eerie music just plays to let the audience know this is important.
Yeah.
This is important. Cut to Damien who's enjoying the birthday party activities. He's doing this little mini roller coaster ride that they have. And then he's on a carousel when you hear someone yelling, Damien! Damien! And everybody looks. We see Robert looking. Holly is now on top of the mansion. Yeah, she's got a noose around her.
The nanny, yeah.
Right. And she says, Damien, I love you. Damien, it's all for you. And then she jumps, hanging herself. She crashes in the window.
Yeah.
And they're trying to cover Damien's eyes.
But Damien seems to approve.
He does. He's looking at the...
He's enjoying it. He's having a good time.
He's looking at the Rottweiler and smiling. Like, good job.
It's like, nice. This is fun. I also want to add here, too, that I think it is... That the fact that Damien has so few lines makes him so much creepier. He says almost nothing the whole movie.
I think he's got one line at the end.
Yeah. And that makes him so much creepier to me.
I agree. Compared to the remake, I think this Damien is way creepier.
Have not seen the remake, but I believe you.
I've watched all five of these things.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've only seen the first one.
Right. So I want to compare later. At the end, I'll talk about some things that I liked all of them or didn't like about some of them. We also meet the photographer Jennings here, played by David Warner. With growing up, we knew him from Tron. He was Master Control Program.
Really?
The boss, Ed Dillinger.
Right. That was him.
It was Dillinger. Star Trek VI, he's Chancellor Gorkon.
Yeah.
And then in Scream 2, he was Sydney's drama teacher. I'm sure he had a name, but he was the drama teacher that convinces her to stay in the play.
Well, it makes sense for him to be the drama teacher, considering what a successful actor he's been.
Yeah, that's true. But he sees, that's the photographer, sees Damien smiling and waving at the Rottweiler, which I thought was interesting. Back at the embassy, the news are there. Jennings is there with other photographers as well. And they're asking questions about the suicide. Was there a note? Is it true she used to be into drugs? It feels like they're wording the questions to try to get him to say something he doesn't mean.
Yeah.
But he said he doesn't care about what the news report says. He's got no comment. He turns around, accidentally bumps Jennings, and he knocks his camera over and breaks it in half. He tells him, will you bill me for the damages? And Jennings tells him, oh, that's okay, Mr. Ambassador. Let's just say you owe me one.
Yeah.
Which I think is a smart move, knowing like later events. Yeah. Well, maybe not.
At that point, they feel very antagonistic to each other, I feel like. And it's kind of neat how later in the movie, they really become a team.
Yeah.
Which is that's really cool.
And then we meet Father Brennan, who's played by Patrick Troughton. Do you know who that is?
I know.
Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
He was the second Doctor who played
Who
fan. Little flute. He was my, of the original Doctors. No, everybody loves four, but I like two. But he's so silly and goofy.
I have not watched Doctor Who, so
yeah. So I got excited to see him in this because like it's the Doctor. Like it's, you know, like it's good to see people, you know, have other roles.
Yeah. That's true.
Father Brennan shows up, warns Robert about Damien's origins. Unfortunately, he starts very heavy-handed. Like, you have to accept Jesus as your savior.
Yeah, I know.
You got to drink blood. You got to eat his flesh.
Like, it's ridiculous.
We talked about that in Rosemary's Baby as well. Like, when you're trying to convince someone something, don't start with the most insane part.
And the fact that he's like screaming like breathlessly right away instead of explaining why he's there.
It's the only way you can beat the devil's son.
Yeah, like he doesn't know the background, my dude. Start at the beginning, then maybe the middle.
He calls security, and Robert, he thinks that Father Brennan is just trying to blackmail him, but he kicks him out of his office. He even yells the line that he tries to tell him, Damien's mother was a jet, and it got interrupted right there when security busts through. He's not able to finish the phrase.
And the only way you ever get the completion of that word is by looking it up.
Sure.
Because they do not actually say the word. I mean, we'll get to that, but...
Okay. Do they not when they're reading the scripture? I don't know. Maybe they didn't.
If they did, I missed it. Maybe they did. Let me ask you, did you hear it in the movie or did you look it up?
Yeah. I don't know now. It might have been when I was like reading trivia and stuff.
Yeah. That was when I find, because I've been wondering the whole movie, what was his mother exactly, right? Okay. And I had to look it up. And I got from the scene at the end that we're getting to later, but it wasn't completely clear enough.
Sure. You know? I get what you're saying. Yeah, I think you're probably right. As Brennan is getting escorted off the property, Jennings is taking a picture of the father leaving the grounds. Then we show him developing the pictures, and he sees what looks like some kind of black line in the picture, like this distortion that's headed towards the father. He's not sure why that defect exists in the picture.
Yeah, it's very blurry too. It's not clear what that defect is.
Right. We cut to Robert and Kathy talking. One of their workers of the house comes in and says that Mrs. Balak has arrived. She's arrived unannounced. They weren't expecting her, but then she tells her that many of the young nannies are either homesick or have boy trouble, but she's left all that go a long time ago. Now can I see the boy? Yeah. It's like pretty insistent. Now can I see the boy?
Yeah.
And at first they say, yeah, okay, great, go see the boy. And then Robert's like, hey, where'd you find her? And Kathy's like, what do you mean? I thought you found her. And so then they stop her before she sees Damien, and they ask her, and she says that the agency sent me over. They read about it in the newspaper, and they wanted that how much trouble you had the first nanny. So they want to replace her right away, and that's why I'm here. And she pulls out a big envelope, says, here's my references.
And it's interesting that he says, we'll check up on that later, but I guess they never did?
He says that multiple times in this movie, too.
Says what?
I'll check up on that later.
Oh, really?
Yeah, later when... I mean, I got the impression that Mrs. Balak kind of fires the rest of the staff, but they're all gone. They've packed their bags and they left a forwarding address for their last check because he's going to go back to Rome to investigate Damien. Uh-huh. She gives him that information. He goes, okay, well, when I get back, I'll check on that later, like to fact check your story.
Right.
But I don't know that he ever gets to.
He doesn't do his homework, yeah.
Right. I think he threatens to, but he never does it.
Right.
So yeah, so then afterwards, after she gives him the references, she's like, now let me see the boy. She's very anxious to see that boy.
No kidding.
And upon meeting Damien, Mrs. Balak tells him that there's no reason to worry because she is there to protect him.
I feel like this is, I don't remember where we start hearing the Latin chorus in this movie.
Sure, it's there a lot.
It's musically very effective. I think it works very well at a musical level. It really conveys the tone.
Sure.
Unfortunately, the Latin is garbage.
It's not real Latin?
It is garbage Latin. Yeah. It's like the person who wrote it does not understand Latin grammar.
Ah, zhuzh, nominush. Like they just faked it?
Well, they didn't quite fake it. They just get it all wrong. They don't understand the grammar, so it's all wrong. They're using the wrong endings for the nouns, and it's just like gibberish. What they're trying to say is, we drink the blood, we eat the body, hail Satan. They're trying to say against Christ, but it's all wrong. Like, for example, they say versus Christus, but like versus... I mean, in English, the word versus means against, but that's not what it meant in Latin.
Okay.
It meant towards.
Oh.
So it was totally wrong. And
sure.
There's a bunch of stuff too, like they use the wrong, like I said, they use the wrong noun cases, and it's just all wrong.
That's funny.
Which is too bad, but it's still really cool. It sounds really good.
It worked on this dumb American right here.
It absolutely works. It works great for the atmosphere, which is what it's really for.
Sure.
I wouldn't have even known what they were saying if not for the subtitles.
Oh, sure.
Because it's not even clear, really. But
got it. The next morning, they're getting ready for church. Kathy asks Mrs. Balak why Damien isn't ready. And Mrs. Balak's like, oh, I was going to take him to the park. Children always misbehave at church anyway. And Kathy puts her foot down. She's like, no, I want him in the car in 5 minutes. And still Mrs. Balak is like, yeah, but would a 5-year-old really understand what's going on at a church? And Kathy's like, you don't understand. I need him dressed in the car in 5 minutes.
She's She's trying so hard to keep him from going into that cursed building.
Right.
That cursed, evil, good building.
So then we see the Thorns driving up to the church. He seems to be scared. She says that he's trembling all over. And then when they pull up, Robert actually has time to get out of the car. But then Damien starts going crazy, attacking Kathy, pulling her hair. He actually scratches her face. Robert's able to get back on the car. Everybody there at the church is freaking out what happened to the ambassador as they speed off away and go back.
I do kind of like movies where they show the satanic or whatever character being like terrified of God.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of neat because, you know, it's usually for these horror things, it's the other way around. We're afraid of them, but then it's like, oh no, there's somebody they got to be afraid of too.
Sure. So later we see Kathy covering up the bruises that Damien caused with makeup. Robert asks if Damien should see a doctor, and Kathy mentions that he's never seen one in his life. Robert thinks that's a little strange. Like, wait, how's a child never been sick? And then this is where we meet the Rottweiler in the house. Robert's walking, he runs into the Rottweiler, and Mrs. Balak's like, oh, he's going to be a great watchdog. Trust me, you'll love that he's here when you're on those long trips around the world.
That's such a wonderful, creepy scene. Like, her and the dog at the end of the hallway, and he's like, just the whole shot is like, like so scary to me.
But Robert's very much the man of the house. He's like, no, if I want a dog, I will pick out a dog.
Which is the position any reasonable person would take, right? Sure. Like, and it was terrifying to me because, like, for several reasons, right? I mean, first of all, just the scene, and also I'm kind of scared of dogs. But but then also just the idea of having someone in your house who's clearly got their own agenda and is doing things like that dramatic without even telling you, right? Right. Like just bringing an animal into your house, like that's scary.
Okay, so here I want to mention last movie, Rosemary's Baby, right? Mia Farrow. Uh-huh. She in the remake plays Mrs. Baylock.
Oh, really?
Which is amazing to me, because if you were going to dream cast a movie that it was your favorite to remake it and you could, wanted to trust any woman in the world to raise the devil's son,
uh-huh.
who better than Rosemary from Rosemary's Baby?
Yeah, like, that's true.
Good thing. But she... Obviously, she loves, you know, obviously loves the movie, but she wanted to put her own spin on the character because she thought it would be ridiculous for someone to continue to let a woman stay in the house to watch their child,
yeah.
who obviously went against their wishes.
I did think that was ridiculous.
So in the remake, she's much more friendly and nice to the Thorns the whole time.
That makes more sense.
And it seems much more realistic. So I wanted to point that out. I love that.
I thought it was absurd, too. And you know, it's worth pointing out the reviewers trashed this movie.
Sure.
Like the critics at the time all said it was the worst movie they'd ever seen. It was total garbage. It was, you know, no one should ever waste their time seeing such a piece of garbage, and that it had no logic to it and nothing made any sense. And I think they went a little too far, but I do think that it made no sense continuing to let this woman manipulate them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Kathy and Damien are going out to the park while Robert's out for a drive. They're not together. Robert sees the priest is following him, or Father Brendan is following him around, or he seems to be everywhere he goes. And Damien walks over after getting some ice cream to look at the giraffes, and Damien arrives at the giraffes. They all look at him, and they all take off, like, we want nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
They get into a car. They're listening to, like, a tour on tape. Like, and up next, we have the baboons. Please keep all windows up, that kind of thing. The baboons, when they see Damien is in their presence, all go nuts and crazy.
Yeah.
On a behind-the-scenes kind of thing, the director attempted to take a baby baboon into the car to make them get upset, but they didn't care. Then they took a mother baboon into the car, and every other one, all the baboons went nuts.
Like, it was like the alpha, right?
Yeah.
That's what they, yeah. I had read that.
And so they all got upset at that one. So then they got a little scared that maybe they're going a little too crazy.
Yeah.
Which I think is awesome. That night, Kathy tells Robert that she wants to see a psychiatrist because of her fears and fears that she thinks people wouldn't want to lock her away for because she's scared of her own child.
She doesn't tell him in detail.
She doesn't.
And she really should, considering that, you know, he's taking a really long time. And this is, you know, one of those complaints in movies, right? Like, mm-hmm. it takes him way too long to figure out something's going on. Like, he's got all the information he needs, right?
Sure.
But yeah, she should have told him, you know, and you kind of feel like you wish that she would, but she doesn't.
Yeah, it's almost that trope, the husband never believes.
Yeah, I guess. But in this case, it was, she didn't even like try to tell him.
Yeah, this is true. You're right. So then we cut to a rugby game, and Jennings there taking pictures of the game, but he's also taking pictures of Robert Thorne, the ambassador. After the game, Brennan asks Robert to meet him. He says, hey, meet me at this park. At this time, you need 5 more minutes. Give me 5 minutes and you will never see me again. And he tells him, your wife is in danger. If you don't meet me, she will die.
And surely this time he's not just going to shout a bunch of nonsense and riddles and not explain himself, right?
You would think so. They think that Jennings might have overheard the conversation because he was there taking pictures of them. It's not as clear. Then we cut to Jennings developing the photos, and he sees another line in the photo, but this time it's going right through Father Brennan, the distortion.
Yeah, the weird, blurry, whatever it is.
Right. And then we cut to the park. Robert Thorne is meeting Father Brennan, and he tells Robert that he needs to go to Medigo.
Megiddo.
Megiddo, an old city in Jezreel, and see a man named Bunnenhagen. I was bad at that one. Sorry.
Can you spell it? I don't remember.
Bugenhagen.
Oh, yeah. Bugenhagen.
Bugenhagen. Yeah, that's what I said.
There you go.
He alone can describe how the child must die. Then Father Brennan says that Kathy is pregnant and that Damien will want to kill the unborn child. He says that Damien will also kill Kathy. And then when he is set to inherit all that is yours, Robert, he will kill you as well. Robert never wants to see Brennan again, but Brennan says that they will see each other in hell where they will share out their sentence.
Which is interesting, because before that, you have no suggestion that the priest is guilty of something.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting statement. We learn more later.
We do. We follow Father Brennan. The wind picks up. The music starts like crazy. Tense music.
A lot more bad Latin, yeah.
Yeah. Lightning hits a tree, cracks it in half. Father Brennan actually climbs a fence to try to escape. Right when he gets on the other side, lightning hits that fence, breaking a big piece of it off. And when he makes it to the church doors are locked and can't seem to get in. He tries multiple entry points, and then lightning hits a lightning rod, which should be designed to catch lightning.
You would think.
But it dislodges it, and it falls and spears him right through the body.
And this is another, to me, laughable scene. Like, I definitely laughed out loud at the scene where he looks up in the sky and puts his hands up and goes, ah, while the thing is just coming straight towards him. And he's like, it's like, okay, so you could move one step this way, one step this way, one step this way. No, none of those. You're going to stand there and just go, ah.
It's like in Austin Powers when the steamroller is coming and the guy's screaming but never moves out of the way.
I was thinking of that during that scene, because it's so much like that. It's like, come on. It was a ridiculous scene.
Oh, man. So back home, Kathy can't stand the noise. Damien's just playing. He's just playing. She starts yelling for Mrs. Balak to take Damien away. Robert says he's just being a child. He's just playing. And he thinks Kathy's overreacting. You find out Kathy has been seeing a doctor. The doctor wants to see Robert because she tells him she is pregnant and that she wants an abortion. Then the phone rings, interrupts their conversation. Whoever's on the other end of the phone tells him to check the newspaper, and when he flips open to page one, it shows the lightning rod through Father Brennan. I guess the photographers got there before the crime scene. I don't know, because it's the exact moment that, like,
yeah,
it hadn't been moved.
That wouldn't be shocking to me, actually.
Yeah, okay.
If they did, because I mean, you know, the reporters, they got more money on the line than the police.
Sure. Kathy's watering plants, and Damien is riding a tricycle in his room in circles, and the nanny looks so evil in this moment.
She, through the whole movie, I found her very genuinely terrifying. Mm-hmm. I mean, I already mentioned, like, to me, the idea of having someone in your house doing stuff is scary. I mean, you know why, if you know my personal life. but just the way her acting also was excellent.
So, yeah, I don't know how Mrs. Balak knew exactly when to open that door, but she opens the door right as Kathy gets onto a stool to water plants up high. They have so many housekeepers in this house. They have, like, maids and stuff. Oh, why weren't they watering the plants? No idea. Damien comes up in the tricycle, hits the stool, knocks Kathy over the edge. She's able to hold on to the railing. She asks Damien for help, but he doesn't do anything. And she falls and twists slowly in a way that she's going to land on her belly so that it kills the baby, which is unfortunate.
Well, it's unfortunate or fortunate depending on which character you are.
Sure. Oh my. Robert gets a call from Jennings to ask him to meet him at his flat. There, Jennings shows Robert a similar line in the picture of his first nanny, Holly, going down onto her body, pointing at her neck, like if it was the rope she was hanging from. Then he shows pictures of Father Brennan, and the closer we get to the timeline where he dies, the closer that distortion goes to his body, and it's angled.
It becomes clearer, too, less blurry.
Right, and it looks like the rod that went through his body.
Right.
And we find out from Jennings that Brennan was dying. He had cancer. And that he tells them that he had a mark on his body in the inner thigh, which is 666, and that it was a birthmark. He was born with it. And this is where he shows it to Robert. They think concentration camp? Like, that's where the...
Yeah, that was...
I was like, what?
There is a little bit of an explanation, though.
I mean, they are closer to the time of World War II.
Yeah, but it's more than that. So, like, apparently, according to Wikipedia, the whole idea of sort of dispensationalism and that whole reading of the Book of Revelation and everything was not popular until this movie.
Okay.
And so the 666 thing, supposedly, I don't know if this is true, but supposedly was not well known. Like, the Omen was the movie that popularized all of this stuff.
Interesting.
And according to somebody I read somewhere on the internet, and again, I don't know whether to believe him or not, but supposedly that whole interpretation of the Bible and the end times and all the omens that are supposed to lead up to it and the Antichrist and the 666, like, supposedly that was all really fringe until The Omen came out, and then suddenly it was super popular throughout, you know, Christian communities throughout America, which I don't know how true that is, but it's an interesting idea. I mean, movies can affect large populations of people.
Sure. Yeah, that is interesting. Wow. Yeah, but my first thought wasn't concentration camp, it was tattoo. Like, he would have done it to himself.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know,
That's a good
but
point.
Then you know, it turns out it was a birthmark.
Although also back then, I mean, probably tattoos weren't as common for like, you know, unless you were like a gangster or something.
Sure, maybe, yeah.
People wouldn't normally have a tattoo like that.
Right, that's true. I guess I just work with a lot of people that are all tattooed. Anyway.
Well, nowadays.
Yeah, nowadays
anybody
it's fine.
Can be, yeah.
Right. Jenny takes Robert Thorne to where Father Brennan lived. His whole room is covered with Bibles. There's crosses everywhere. Brennan reads a diary, and in that diary, it's everywhere that Robert went, like his days so he could follow him, everywhere he goes. But then he also pulls a report about stars alignment that had happened 2,000 years ago, but this time it happened June 6, 1976, on the other side of the Earth. And he asks him,
good old
tell me.
June 6, 19-something-day 6 again.
Right, exactly. And he asks, was your son born at 6 a.m.?
Why is it was 6:66 a.m. in 66 seconds? How did you know?
Right. Yeah. He tells him, this is the first time he says it out loud, that is not my son. He doesn't know whose son he's raising. And Jennings says, well, I'd like to help you find that out. And he tells him, this is not your problem, this is my problem. And this is where Jennings shows him a photo. And this photo shows that same kind of distortion, but it's horizontal and it's pointed right at his neck.
Yeah.
Instead of being a vertical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're getting soon to the part where there was a line that somebody, when they found out, when everybody found out that the unborn baby, his wife's unborn baby was dead. There's.
Yeah, and we're going to get there. When they go to the graves to stay.
I don't know. But okay. There's a character who's a line that, like, I'm like, are you serious? Right? Like, no one would say that. This character, I wrote it down.
Okay.
This character said, like, he's sad because his wife's child, you know, died in the womb. Mm-hmm. And someone says, like, hey, you've got a lot to be grateful for.
Sure.
And I'm like, what did you just... Nobody would say that. Nobody would say that to someone who just lost a child.
You're right. You're right. Not that emphatically.
It's so insensitive. You wouldn't say that.
Yeah, yeah. I might have missed it. You're right. Jennings is going to go with Robert to Rome. He goes to check on his wife. Maybe this is when that line happens. Then he goes home. Or he wants to tell the other staff to watch over Damien. And this is where Mrs. Balak informs her that the rest of the staff quit. And he's like, did you get rid of that dog? And he's like, oh yeah, they took away this morning. And this is where he says he'll investigate it later when he gets back, why they all suddenly all quit. Because he doesn't believe it. Jennings and Robert go off to Rome to investigate Damien's birth. When they arrive at the location the hospital used to be at, they find out there was a massive fire and all the records are gone. He's trying to look into an adoption, but the nun there claims there's never been an adoption at that place because it was all in secret.
Right.
Robert is asking the nun about the priest who gave him the baby in secret. He describes him and the nun is able to tell them where they went to after that fact. On their way to go to that to find Father Spoleto.
Spoleto, yeah. Is it some monastery in the middle of nowhere?
Right. On the way there, they're eating lunch, they're pulled over, and this is where they pull out the interpretation that the Antichrist rising from the eternal sea is to be interpreted as the world of politics. I was like, what?
And I thought it was a stretch, but then at least Robert also said, that's a stretch, right? And I was like, thank you. Thank you. Like,
the sea that consistently rages with turmoil and revolution. And this is the basis for every sequel. Every sequel is on this one line. It's all about politics. And
how unfortunate.
it's insane because it's all about how the Antichrist can get into political power to do something in mm-hmm. every sequel. And we'll go over, I want to talk about them at the end.
Yeah.
A little bit. So they find Father Spoleto in a monastery. He's severely burned. He's mute. He's blind in one eye and he's partially paralyzed, but he can write with one hand a little bit, really poorly with chalk.
And apparently they don't have paper in this monastery.
They don't. That would have been easier than this. Writing with children's chalk, sidewalk chalk on...
I thought it was even like a brick of coal or something.
It could be, but yeah, it was bad. I mean, it was like on rough ground too.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
So they're able to make out from what he says, the cemetery. When he asks the father where it's at, he's like, oh, you can find it on any map. Like, I mean, or you could tell me.
Seriously.
And this is where they go. They find the grave of Damien's mother. And when they pull it up, they find a jackal carcass. Like, again, they don't say what it is.
They don't say that. Yeah, I don't think they ever said the word. word jackal, but maybe they did. I don't know. But it is apparently a jackal. A jackal is his mom.
Well, the remake definitely says the word jackal.
Okay.
And then they look for the next plot over where his child's there, because if his child's not in there, maybe his child's really alive somewhere. But when they uncover it, they see a big hole in the skull of the child and it's cracked open. I don't think a human body in 6 years would it be pure skeleton already?
Oh, that's a good question.
I don't think so.
If not embalmed?
Oh, maybe. Okay.
I'm not sure. I mean, it was dirt in the bottom. Like, it didn't look like it was sealed or anything.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm maybe. Not sure.
I don't know either.
Probably depends on climate conditions and everything else.
Right. So this is where Robert realizes that his son was murdered to make way for Damien.
Like, murdered as soon as he was born, which is a big deal, and he shouts it very loudly.
Yeah. And then a bunch of Rottweilers show up and chase Robert and Ginny's away from the cemetery.
Why, though?
Yeah, I mean, they already found out what they were going to find out.
I know. I was like, what, y'all couldn't have showed up a little earlier? Is the devil not on time? I mean...
Robert starts to call Kathy and warn her that she needs to get out of the hospital, but before she can do so, Mrs. Baylock throws her out the window to her death.
Right.
I mean, she's trying to get her clothes on, and she's stuck in her shirt, and she's like, is someone there? Is someone there? Like, she can't see. And Mrs. Baylock comes, and do we see a fight?
I don't remember.
I know she gets thrown out of the window.
Yeah.
In the remake, Mrs. Baylock just pulls back a syringe full of air and injects it all into the line so that the excessive air would kill her.
Okay, that would be a simple way to do it.
Yeah. Robert and Janine's meet with the Antichrist expert, Carl Boomenhagen, in Israel, who says if Damien is the true Antichrist, he will bear a birthmark with the shape of 3 sixes. Robert says, I've bathed this child. I've seen every inch of his body. It's not there. And he tells them that it must be under the hair. If you remove the hair, you'll be able to see it.
And I have so many problems with this.
Sure.
I mean, the first problem being like, are we really still not sure he's the Antichrist at this point? Like, everybody's died. Y'all are getting chased by Rottweilers. You know his mom's a jackal, but maybe he's still your son. Maybe everything's fine. What? Are you serious? Come on. It's ridiculous.
He doesn't want to kill a kid. Up until the last moment, he doesn't want to kill a kid.
I get he doesn't want to, but like, it's way past the point that you should be looking for more verification here. And also, something rubs me the wrong way about the guy saying, well, if it's not on his body, then it's under his hair. Like, it would have been much better if he had looked all over his body and not found anything and then thought for a moment and then cut his hair. Like, wouldn't that have been a better scene?
Sure. Yeah.
Like, I think that would have made more sense rather than him just going, oh, then logically it's on his hair. Hand me my pipe, Watson. You know,
there's a scene in the third one where Damien as an adult is getting makeup and stuff to go speak. And the makeup artist is about to do his hair. And he's like, oh, I'll get that part. Because he doesn't want anybody to see it. I kind of laughed at that part. Carl gives Robert 7 daggers, which are the only things that are able to kill Damien, and it has to happen on holy ground.
But he says the first one kills his physical body. So what really happens if he just kills this physical body? You know, how would it still go wrong without the other 6?
I don't know.
I'm being too logical. I'm being too logical.
No, you're okay. I think you're right though, because the third one, he's only stabbed with one. And he completes the trilogy, and he is killed. But he's only stabbed with 1 dagger.
Is he, though? Isn't there an omen 4?
There is. It is not him. It is his children.
Oh, okay.
Or it's his daughter.
Well, there you go. Maybe that's what the problem is.
Maybe that's what the problem is. He had already impregnated the woman by that point.
Oh, okay.
All right, so anyway, Robert, on the way afterwards, Jennings is like, you have to tell me what happened. I have a right to know. I'm going to die next. I have a right to know. And he tells him that he told him that he's supposed to kill him. He has these daggers and that he refuses to do it, and he throws it. Jennings like, then I'll do it. He runs to start collecting the daggers. We see this guy get out of a truck up the hill. The brake turns itself off for no reason. And it starts heading towards him as Jennings collecting all the daggers. We see the truck hit a bump. This glass slides off the truck, and in a very practical effect, but you know, of the times, the glass goes right through his body and the head rolls on top of the glass.
I think thought it looked all right.
It looked good for the times. Yeah.
The only thing it was missing was there's a Rottweiler in the distance. He stares into the car's headlights. The car stares back. You know, nothing like that happened though.
Sure.
That would have been that would have made sense.
Right. That's funny. So when returning home, Robert finds the Rottweiler is definitely not gone. It's still there. He's able to trap him in behind a door. He gets to Damien. He brings a knife. He starts cutting away his hair, and he does see on his scalp. It looked like 3 circles, but I see it. They're all facing different directions.
They're all 6s, but they're like the stems of the 6s meet in the center, which is kind of neat.
Okay. Yeah, he's attacked by Mrs. Baylock, and they get into a fight. He has to stab her in the neck, and she's killed. Armed with the daggers, Robert gets Damien in the car, and he starts fleeing to holy ground, to the cathedral. He blazes right by past a cop, so a cop calls it in, saying there might be a diplomatic incident. So all the cops are chasing him down. He gets him into the church. As we know, Damien in church starts screaming. He gets him down. He gets one dagger up. He holds it. The only line Damien says in the whole movie is like, "Please don't, Father," or something to that extent.
Yeah.
And then the cops go in and say, "If you don't drop it, I'll shoot." They don't even have time to think about it. And they shoot him. He dies. And then we cut to a double funeral for Kathy and Robert. And we see the U.S. president and the first lady are there. They're told their car's ready for whenever they want to go. And then we see that the first lady is holding Damien's hand. He turns around, looks at the camera, and smiles. And according to this, Richard Donner, who was the director, had to use reverse psychology on him, on the child actor. He told him, "Don't you dare smile, don't you dare laugh, or I won't be your friend." And it made him smile, which is what made him smile.
That's very clever.
It's cool.
I do like the decision to only have him speak then, because speaking humanizes him, and yeah, it makes sense for him to be humanized right when he's most desperate for mercy, right? Like, that was kind of a good decision. I like that. I do think, though, that this is, there's so much about that whole scene and everything involved is like, everyone is behaving crazily, right? Like, if people would think for a moment before they acted, all of this could have been avoided.
Sure. So a couple of behind-the-scenes things. The Rottweiler was problematic to film with because he was way too friendly and just wanted to he just wanted to lick and be petted. He wanted cuddles. Oh, man. Gregory Peck apparently took a pay cut for this at a mere $250,000, but with a guarantee that he would get 10% of any of the film's box office gross.
Ooh, that was a good decision.
So when it grossed more than $60 million in U.S. alone, it became his highest paid performance of his whole career.
Nice.
Oh, man.
Smart move. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's there's also, it's kind of weird, the funeral thing, they give him this whole, like, however many guns salute, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, y'all think he just tried to murder his child. Is that really appropriate?
They do think that, yeah. But you're right. So I guess they wanted to wash it away.
I guess. Well, that could make sense. Maybe they didn't publicize it.
Yeah. In the sequels, it's a secret pretty much. That,
oh, okay.
That, now that makes sense. His father wanted to do it.
All right.
I want to say, so in the remake, Liv Schreiber, he was from Screams 1, 2, and 3. He played...
might know who that is.
The person that was supposed to have killed Sydney's mother.
Is he the guy who seems really crazy, just in
part
general?
In part 2, he was crazy.
Okay.
I like, because he was trying to get an interview with
He's not the guy who plays serial killer, right?
No.
No,
no, okay. Stumacher? Is that what you mean?
I don't know. Never mind.
It's not Matthew Lillard.
Okay.
No, but he's also... he plays... Sabretooth in Wolverine Origins and a few of the X-Men movies. Julia Stiles from the Bourne Identity movies. She plays Kathy. And David Thewlis, who's Lupin from the Harry Potter movies. He plays Keith Jennings, the photographer. And then Mia Farrow from Rosemary's Baby plays Mrs. Baylock, which I thought was genius. So in the second movie, we get that guy that was the guy whose name I can't pronounce, that was the one that told him, gave him the daggers and told him how to kill him. We start with him. They try to go recover the daggers and they're like collapsed. Where they're showing some wall with more evidence of the Antichrist and they're like killed in a collision. And then it cuts to when Damien is 12 years old and Lance Hendrickson of the Alien movie is the like sergeant in charge, but he is a devil worshiper and he's trying to raise him. He's the one that explains to Damien who you are, which is weird because in the first movie, Damien knew, it looked like Damien knew what was going on. It
definitely seemed that
and
way.
And now as a 12-year-old, he's forgotten and someone has to explain to him that he's the son of Satan.
That sounds weird.
It's weird.
That sounds consistent with the somewhat lack of sense throughout the first movie.
Sure. And then the big twist at the end is you find out his new mother, the adopted mother, has been a Satanist this whole time. Kills her husband to protect Damien. But then Damien doesn't know that she's protecting him and thinks they're all against him. So he summons the power of fire and kills them all in a fire. Hmm. All those daggers are burned and buried. So in part 3, when he's an adult, played by Sam Neill from Jurassic Park, which I thought was a great casting. I like part 3, actually. We see the daggers. Someone's cleaning out the rubble from this burning. He finds one dagger. He starts hiding them in his clothing. He finds them all. They go up for auction. They're bought by a member of the church. The church has a sect that has been looking for them to kill the Antichrist because they know who it is. So they have a 7-member team going after Damien.
Each one with a different knife.
And Damien knows they're coming for them. And in the craziest part of the movie, which some people don't like because they don't like baby murders. But I mean, I think it works in horror. It's fiction. Damien has this thing. He has followers that knows who he is, that work for him in the government. And they are all sent on a mission to kill every baby born on a specific day because he has interpreted that the second coming of Christ will be through a baby, just like he came. Mm-hmm. To this earth, so he kills every male child born in London in this specific day.
London.
And figures. Then this one guy that works for him swears his baby was born 10 minutes before the day was over, but because Damon hasn't felt the concept that the kid has died yet, he knows that he's still alive, orders him to get hit, you know, to kill him. And so he goes to where that baby's hiding, and this woman that he falls in love with ends up betraying him and stabbing him in the back with a one. But I thought the third one was really good. Way better than the second one. A lot of people don't feel that way, but it did. And then the fourth one, the twist is it's a girl this time. The Antichrist is a girl. You find out she's really Damien's daughter.
Well, that would make sense. I mean, the Antichrist is the opposite of Christ, and Christ was a boy. Then it makes sense the Antichrist would be a girl.
All right, follow me here, though, okay? So we find out that this time, when the mom of the girl is pregnant, she supports the baby being born. People all around, every time they're trying to investigate, are dying. But when the baby's born, this girl loves the baby. And it turns out, we find out that when she was born, she had a twin, but the twin stayed as an embryo and stayed in the little girl's body. So she had to get old enough to have her first period. And then they were able to go in and get the embryo and implant it in her mother. And the mother thinks she got pregnant on her own, has birth to this boy, who turns out is the Antichrist. And the daughter was put on the earth first to protect the baby boy. So she's significantly older, 8 years old compared to him, newborn, so that she can grow up protecting him, so the new Antichrist could have a protector who's a sibling. But what was ridiculous at the end is the 666 is on the palm of the kid's hand in this like massive like I don't know, it's like Audi, like a birthmark, but an Audi. Like he'd never be able to hide that. Like you have to wear a glove. Yeah, his whole life. I thought it looked dumb.
Yeah.
It was a bad effect. But the fourth one is trash. It's a horrible movie.
Well, so on the subject of evaluation of the movie, I mean, it is interesting, I think, to ask that question, like with regards to the first movie again.
Sure.
Which is the only one I've seen. Whether or not it is a good movie, right? I mean, because I actually think it's a good movie. I think it does the drama well. It's got good acting.
Right.
It builds mood well, you know. It's cool. It's neat. It's got some memorable scenes and stuff. But right. At the same time, it's definitely corny, right?
Yeah.
I mean, for sure it's corny, and it's got some questionable writing. And so maybe it's not that surprising when you look and what I was reading was that, like I said, like everyone at the time, like all the critics, you know, this thing is trash. What a piece of garbage movie, you know. And then audiences today, you look at Rotten Tomatoes, they love it, you know. Sure. gets huge ratings, and I can see both sides. I think like you can kind of see both. And apparently the original concept that the director I think had was that the whole movie they would leave the audience in question as to whether the events were really coincidence or not. Right. That's such a better idea.
It is.
That would have been such a better movie.
And the thing that ruined it, what people love, is the Mrs. Baylock's character. He wanted her to pretend to be nice the whole time.
Which would make a lot more sense. Which
makes more sense for her to stay in the house, but she wanted to play this evil person. And if he had like said, no, you have to play a nice person that the parents would like, then yes, we would not know the whole movie whether or not these events were happening because of him or were just like these Final Destination type Ruhlberg things that were just happening all the time.
I would have rather seen that movie, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I mean, it still turned out entertaining, but yeah. I would have rather seen that.
Yeah, I get you.
And I also read another thing that I wanted to bring up that I thought was a neat kind of take on it, was this idea that the movie sort of expressed the 1970s zeitgeist of everything falling apart. And, you know, it was in the middle of one of the worst economic downturns, you know, the oil shocks, everything was becoming super expensive and nobody was making any money anymore. Everything was falling apart and decaying. And it seemed like politically everything was falling apart. We thought the Russians were ahead of us technologically, even at one point.
Sure.
And it just looked like we were losing and the world was falling apart. And that's a little familiar today. but like, and you know, they had that, like the weathermen blowing up buildings all over the place throughout the country, and it just looked like a disaster. And so people were like, yeah, well, it's the end times, right? It's the end of the world. Clearly it's the end of the world. And this person nailed it, and they made a movie about this is the end of the world. This is what it looks like.
Sure.
It's happening. And it resonated. I mean, maybe someone will make another, maybe now is the time we need the new Omen, the new movie, whatever movie replaces it.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. All right. Hereditary. Hereditary.
Well, yeah, I'll have to watch that.
That's a good one. That was a good one. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. Hope you listen to us again. It's been fun.
Indeed.
Right, bye.